water, sir.
Felt like an umpire.
There we go. All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
So today, Tom and I have the delightful task of talking about whether God exists, a very central question in both religion and spirituality. And I thought before we began our conversation, I would just share some statistics about this in this slide. I don't know how well you can see this, so I'm going to read it to you. But this is a survey done by Pew Research. They're really renowned for the quality of their religious research surveys, etc. This is from 2018. And they asked people, do you believe in God or not? And the answer was 80% said yes, but that 80% was broken out into 56% who said they believe in God as described in the Bible, and another 23% of that who said they believe in God said they believe in some other higher power or spiritual force, so not necessarily the God in the Bible. But then over there where it says 19% said they don't believe in God, 9% of those said, but they do believe in some higher power or spiritual force. And then only 10% said they don't believe in anything at all. So if you combine those middle ones, 23 and 9, about 33 or so percent when you round up, believe in some other higher power or spiritual force they may or may not refer to as God. So I think that's the significant fact here, that about a third of respondents said they believe in a different kind of God.
I think that's very optimistic.
The survey results?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think that because people are searching now that some of the traditional religions have fallen apart,
right,
are kind of going down the drain.
Yeah.
I don't mean it that way. But yeah, people are searching.
Yes, people are searching. That's when people say they're spiritual but not religious, they're saying that I'm seeking. I'm interested in other interpretations of these ideas.
Yeah, I think of the God of the Bible as a beginning.
Ah.
It's a place to start. It's not a place to end.
Mm. That's good, although some people do end
there.
I
know they do.
According to that 56%. So what comes to mind for you, Tom? You can go ahead to the next slide. What comes to mind for you when somebody says they don't believe in God?
Well, my father comes to mind first.
Okay.
And my father was a searching person. He was a person who said often that the question is sometimes more important than the answer. And I kind of grew up like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't resent my father's atheism, but it kind of astonished me. It surprised me, mm-hmm, because I've always believed in God, partly because of my mother.
Mm.
When I would go out to play, my mother would say, God is with you when I can't be.
Wow.
So she gave me this idea that there was some invisible presence there that would help me if I got into trouble.
Yeah. I found that when sometimes when people find out that you're a minister or priest or whatever the case may be, if they're not a churchgoer, for example, one of the first things they'll say is, I don't believe in God. And mm-hmm. So what I've learned to say back to them is something that Reverend Wendy Craig Purcell writes about in her book, Ask Yourself This. She says, if somebody tells you they don't believe in God, ask them, tell me about the God that you don't believe in. Because of this, because this is really significant, the term atheist means that you're not a theist, right? A theist is somebody who believes in God as a super being, as the man in the sky, as all that kind of thing. Mm. So to be an atheist does not necessarily, just by the term itself, exclude other interpretations of God. But more often than not, if you invite somebody, you may find this in your own conversations, if you invite someone to tell you about the God they don't believe in, you will find out it's not the God you believe in either. I'm saying this for unity people here. And you can actually establish some common ground. I found that really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, atheism can be a beginning, not the end.
Mm-hmm.
So my question for you, Tom, is what is your concept of God?
Well, I heard a very wonderful concept of God yesterday from Margaret Jenkins.
Aw.
And she said, My picture is on God's refrigerator. I think that's pretty good. I guess my notion of God, well, first of all, I'm kind of cautious about it, because the more you think you know about God, you probably don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So God really lives with me in a kind of mysterious sense,
yeah.
Just as my wife is kind of a mystery to me as well. Not that she's God, but sometimes she sounds like it, good and bad. But I'm a little wary of reducing God to a concept.
Yeah.
In the same way I'm wary of reducing anyone to a concept,
mm-hmm.
or to a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But God, if I have to do that, I would say God is the perfect parent. He's the perfect love. He's the perfect friend. He's all those things about love that we talk about and we strive for.
Mm.
So that's God, and God is all around us. It, in some sense, everybody senses God, and they sort of know God when they see it.
Mm. Or feel it.
Or feel it.
Yeah.
Or feel it, yes.
Yeah.
That, and you felt that with God, with church, with people, in relationships, with your children, you've felt God present. The problem is God will not be reduced to a concept.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. In Unity, we're pretty careful about not thinking of God as a parent, just because we don't want to continue to personify God. It like starts to conjure up some old, you know,
right.
Or could possibly. So, but I love what you're saying about not conceptualizing in a way that contains what God is. Because I remember in ministerial school, we were pressing one of our professors about this, and he finally just said, it's all a mystery. And I thought, you know what? I can be okay with God being a mystery. I can be okay with it being sort of the unfathomable, if you will, this sort of overarching presence, intelligence, love, consciousness, sort of a sense of sort of beingness itself, not a being, but more beingness itself. And that's hard sort of put in a box, right, when you think of that. And I wanted to share, you know, I think sometimes, well, certainly in Unity, we try to pay attention to and follow what Jesus taught. And Jesus did not teach the angry, judgmental, punishing God that a lot of, I think, more traditional Christianity tends to lean toward. But Jesus taught, this is from a book called Death of the Mythic God, Jesus taught that we're one with God, not separate from God, that heaven is not a place in the sky, but a level of consciousness, that God is not a man requiring the subordination of women, but a unified presence encouraging the love of all, that God does not belong only to one religion, but can be accessed by many paths, that God is not a God of law, but a God of being, that God has no negative features such as judgment and vindictiveness, and that God is to be accessed directly rather than through a patriarchal hierarchy. That last one is super important, is it not?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what he was going against in his own religion at the time. God is not a supernatural being who intervenes on earth on our behalf. Rather, we are responsible for doing the works of God on earth, and we are responsible for whatever surfaces in our lives. Doesn't that sound like Unity,
mm-hmm.
like through and through?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it truly does. I think it's a huge shift in everybody's spiritual journey when they begin to open up the mystical aspect of God rather than the personified aspect of God.
Yes, as I get deeper into God, or God reveals itself deeper, more deeply to me, I sense that my identity is in God. That who I really am is one with God.
Mm.
That's the final verdict on who Tom Baker is.
Ooh. I love that, Tom.
Yeah.
That's your true essence.
That's my true essence. That's your true essence. That's everybody's true essence.
Yeah. That's the truth,
yes,
we're waking
amen.
Up to. So when did you first have a sense of God? Were you a little boy?
I was a little boy, again, with my mother, who told me, go out to play, and God will be there when I can't. I often thought that God was in kind people. When people were kind, teachers, students, everybody else, that God was there. And that there were different people in their kindness and in their genuineness who were like God. Mm. So I kind of had the sense that God was all around me.
Mm. And did you call it God at the time when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Did you sort of think of it as
mm-hmm.
God, my friend, God, this presence?
Mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I was a sweet little child.
Yeah, I bet you were. You're a sweet guy still. So I don't think I really had a sense of God, but I think I was a seeker as a
mm-hmm.
kid. I think I was looking for something. I wasn't sure what I was looking for. I feel like there's more to life than what I'm seeing in front of my eyes. And it wasn't until I got into Unity that I realized I'd been lurking for God.
Yes.
You know, even as a kid. So my father, like your father, was an atheist. And I'm just wondering, did that affect you in any particular way? Like, did you talk about God in your household? Oh, my God.
Talked about God all the time, about how God wasn't around. My father...
Because your mom and dad were on different pages.
My mother was a very devout person and believed in Edgar Casey. And so she had a Casey God, and my father had a kind of... no God, and we would talk and discuss, and my father would ask me questions. My father was also very, very afraid of death, mm-hmm. and he combined the two, since he didn't believe in God, that death was just oblivion, and he didn't like oblivion.
Yeah.
So we used to go picnicking in the cemetery, so my father could meet death on its own terms.
Did you seriously do that?
Yes. Yes.
Did that help?
It didn't help him, but it got me very interested in death and very interested in God. His proclamations, and I don't mean to promulgate, but his proclamations about God were so extreme that it just got my back up. And I got very curious about God and about death, and I found that both of them were very happy things.
Mm. And did your dad change as he approached death?
Yes, he did.
So how was it at the end of his life?
Oh, he believed in God in heaven.
It was just changed like that? Or?
Yes. I said to my father one time, how are you feeling about dying? He says, oh, I'm feeling much better. Because I'm closer to it. And I think there's a heaven, and I think there may be a God.
Wow.
Counted for him, I hope.
But that's what you want, is for him to be at peace at the end of his life,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so ironic, same exact thing with me. My dad was an atheist. We used to have rousing debates over dinner, really get into it. And at the end, he believed, you know, you die, that's the end of it, there's nothing else. It was very stark. And at the end of his life, I'll never forget, I'm spending time with him, he's in hospice, and contemplating the end, he goes, well, I'll say hello to Gan for you. That's my grandmother who had passed away. And I'm like, what? You know, he just sort of fell into that, you know, and he was very ready to die, so he did not have fear around that. So mm-hmm. he had some sense of, you know, more coming. So, have you had experiences of God as an adult that you would want to share?
Yes, I may have talked about this before, but it's my most extreme experience of God, and the one that I go back to over and over again when I have any doubts about God. And it was the story about when I was in the seminary. It was winter and close to Valentine's Day. And I was sitting in a chair a bit like this, and I had a table beside the chair, and I was praying. and I prayed that God would kiss me. And I was expecting maybe the ceiling to open up and some wonderful divine lips would come out and just smack it on me. And I looked down at the table and I saw a cricket. And the cricket jumped up on the arm of the chair and then jumped up onto my cheek and jumped away. You said God right there, Sheila. Yeah. That's what I thought too. I thought, wow, God is amazing. And then as the night went by, I had a TV and I stayed up late and watched Johnny Carson and listened to his jokes and the guests and everything. And I thought, oh, well, it's a cold night and the cricket needed a warm place and my cheek was warmer than the table. And so I dismissed the whole thing. I wanted to go to sleep because I was so ecstatic at first, so I wanted to calm myself down, stupid me. So then I went to sleep and got up the next morning and went to pray with the monks, and the monks pray in a line facing one another. And so I looked down the aisle at one point and I saw something moving. And I looked a little closer and it was something hopping. And I looked again, and the thing was hopping. It was a cricket, and it hopped up on my shoe, and it hopped away.
Oh, wow.
That's something? I thought, whoa, God and a bug. So time went by, years went by, I got ordained, and I was here at the beach, and I was saying Mass at Holy Family Church in Virginia Beach. I went early in the morning, it was 8 o'clock, and I didn't have a sermon, or I didn't have a talk. And so I thought I would tell about the cricket. I would just tell that story and then go from there. So I told the story about the cricket, jumping on my shoe. And when I finished, I didn't have anything to say. I just went blank. And all the crickets in the church started chirping. The look on people's faces. Some people just looked amazed. Other people looked scared. One man stood and just looked angry. And I thought to myself, when God really shows up, he gets a mixed reception.
Yeah. That's really true.
That really is true.
Does God speak to you?
Yes, God does speak to me in my own mind, my own voice. At my first Mass, God said to me, I said to myself, I have great faith in God, and God spoke to me in my own thoughts, and God said, Tom, you have almost no faith in me, but I have enormous faith in you. Isn't that nice? I know it's God when it has that kind of bullseye sense to it.
Yes. Yes, there's a certainty. There's a sort of a knowing.
Yes.
I would say that's been my experience, the experiences have stayed with me most, when it's like a knowing comes up, and it's like, that isn't my human voice. That's coming from some deeper place or larger perspective or something like that.
Right, I couldn't have said that.
Just kind of comes ringing through into your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a beautiful thing?
Yes.
I love that.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. So if you were in a conversation with someone who said they don't believe in God and you were activated to try to prove the existence of God to someone, what would you tell them?
Well, I wouldn't tell them anything. But I would ask them, where do they think Shakespeare and Mozart and Chaucer and Beethoven, where do they think mathematics and music, great music, came from? It didn't come randomly. It didn't come by chance. And Shakespeare didn't come as a result of brain chemistry. There's something else in Shakespeare and Chaucer and Beethoven and Mozart that's there.
Yeah.
So it had to start somewhere beyond us. I would also say to them, you know, you don't have God, you have your dreams. That's what you're worshiping. You're worshiping all the dreams that you have, and you want them to come true. And I would say, let God be your dream. Let love be your dream. Total, absolute, lovely, happy, energetic love. Mm-hmm. Let that be your dream.
Mm-hmm. You know, I find if I were having a discussion with someone, what I used to draw on with my dad, and even more so now, is I actually kind of turn to science, or similar to what you're saying, I turn to the unknown, like the mystery of it. Mm-hmm. So what certainly has caught my attention and all of us here, some of the studies with Christopher's class is, you know, how do you explain some of these phenomena such as intuition, premonition, deja vu, synchronicity, even near-death experiences? There's just so much that we can't explain. Even what starts the human heart beating, we don't know, you know, and all these sort of psychic phenomena that are mystifying, but also, you know, really delightful. And I found this quote. I just have to share this. So some people say, oh, well, you know, it's the Big Bang. It just happened. So listen to this. It has been said that the possibilities of life originating by accident are comparable to the probability of the unabridged dictionary originating from an explosion in a print shop.
Huh.
Right?
Right.
That, I mean, come on. That's phenomenal. So what is the value, Tom, of believing in God? You know, people say, I don't believe in God. They just go on their merry way. I mean, we talked a little bit with our fathers as they were approaching death, that there was value, there was peace for them. But in your daily life, what do you see as the value in believing in God, or
meaning,
having a sense of God?
Meaning. Mm. There has to be something more than the meaning I give things and the meaning I have for myself. I'm caught up in myself. You see my hand? That's myself. That's my ego shaking because I'm afraid of you. Uh-huh. Now let me try to stop it. Okay. When I think of God, I think of one who brings us all together without fear, but in love. If I don't have that...
Here, get your mic on again.
Oh, if my mic... Well, my mic fell over here.
Here. Tuck your little ear there. Now.
You're just like my mother.
It's kind of in your... It's kind of in your eye now, but...
There. Can you hear me now? Okay. If I just have me, I just have a very worried person. If I have God in my life, and I'm in God, and God is in me, the universe is my oyster. The mm-hmm. universe is my opportunity. There's more than my body, which is now falling apart. So, you know, life without God is a dead end. Mm-hmm. It's literally a dead end. Mm-hmm. If all there is material stuff, then we are screwed. but God is necessary for meaning, for deep meaning. Yeah. As I look at you, I see God.
Same here.
Yeah, you're questing. You're loving. You're fixing my earpiece. You know, so sweet.
I know, I just can't imagine going through life without a sense of something higher happening, or to me it evokes a sense of awe and wonder and curiosity. You know, Einstein said, never lose a holy curiosity, to just go through life with your eyes open, being aware, paying attention. You know, if Jesus said, become like little children to experience the kingdom of God, that's how you do it, right? By not being caught up in your ego story or the material existence here. But if you think about experiences you've had of God before, hasn't it kind of been, ah, God, right? Ah, God, it's the best.
Like when people say breathe, you know, that's kind of like, let God in.
Yeah.
Let God in.
Yeah. Inspiration.
Inspiration. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Breathe again.
Anything we haven't covered today, Tom?
Let's see. I can't think of it.
I can't either. No, we're not doing questions.
Okay.
I can see that. I can see that moment there. Thank you so much. I behold God in you, my friend.
And I you.
Love you dearly.
Thank you.
Thank you for this time.
I'll miss you.
Our last one of these. Oh, it's very precious today. Oh, thank you. Gosh, I could talk to you forever. This is so sweet. This is time in our service for the sharing of our